Okay, thanks very much, David. And just to say, one of the challenges I have in my new job is that I'm expressly forbidden from commenting on the policies of any of the 195 countries that make up IPCC. So I have to fulfill that mandate while at the same time trying to be interesting. This is a challenge. Right, so what I'm going to do is try to distill some of the IPCC's global messages, and I will do under three headings, and there's an acronym for these headings, which is UAE. And this is not the location of COP28. It stands for urgency, agency, and equity. And these are the three headings I will pursue. So first of all, on the urgency side, it's very evident, as previous speakers have said, climate change is already on us. It's unequivocal that human beings are the cause of the climate change we see. And I think it's been very helpful that Julia set out the just exceptional kind of climate events that we've seen during 2023. On the emissions side, at global level, we have bent the upward trend in emissions, but we have yet to get onto a downward path, and certainly not the steep downward path that we need to get to net zero. And unless we get to net zero, global temperatures will continue to rise because of the cumulative nature of emissions. If we do go beyond 1.5 degrees, there are new risks that are going to emerge at the global level: permafrost degradation, water scarcity in dryland areas, more extreme weather events, worse than we've seen already, and potential damage to the productivity of food systems. And we mustn't forget that sea level rise, which is almost inevitable, is an existential threat for small island states and low-lying coastal areas. So without immediate ambitious action, there are threats to planetary health and human systems. Now, that is a message of despair if we're not very careful about that. And one of the things that we've been very clear about in messaging is that we should not have a sense of paralysis or lack of agency induced by these kind of things, because we do have agency over our future. We do have the tools available, and if we exercise them, we can avoid the worst impacts. And we have indeed started to make progress globally in terms of renewable energy, wind and solar. And I think, as already been said, China has some of the biggest investments in all of these. We've got electrification starting to move out. And again, the biggest deployment of electric vehicles globally is in fact in China. But one thing I would want to flag, there is a concentration of these successes in China, North America, and Europe. And there is a need to spread that more widely geographically, especially for developing countries, countries in sub-Saharan Africa, where actually we need much more investment in infrastructure to enable the rollout of renewable energy. Also flag up that we've got significant progress in terms of land-based measures, especially reforestation and avoided deforestation, where in Asia and in South America we are seeing significant progress. Also flag out on the softer side, we also have all the policy tools available to help us move forward. More than 50% of global emissions are actually covered by climate laws, policies, and institutions. And about a fifth of global emissions are covered by some kind of carbon pricing. So we have the tools available. There is also enough money in the world to deal with the challenge of climate change, even though there are trillions of dollars involved at the international level. If we can pull the levers and start to get private sector funding in to supplement funds from the public sector. So that's the summing up on agency. We've got the technologies, we've got the know-how, we've got the money. We just need to put them to use. But I would caution also from Julia's talk that in a sense we've started on the easy bits. I know it's a major engineering challenge to get a 1 gigawatt offshore wind farm going, but in my view it's the easy bit. The difficult bit is going to come with the measures that involve changes to people's lives, that touch their lives more directly. So the future challenges around transport, housing, potentially dietary issues, are all ones that are going to be much more difficult. So that brings me to the final point, the E in the UAE acronym, which is equity. And why should we be concerned about equity? Well, there's a principled reason for doing it. It's just the right thing to do. But there's also a pragmatic reason, because unless the climate action we take is perceived to be fair, we will not get the consent that is available to allow the transition to take place. People are affected by climate action and what actions that are taking, not just the physical impacts of climate change. So there are two dimensions, I think, to equity. One is the global perspective, equity between the global south and the global north. And one thing that we did in the last IPCC report was carefully set out the facts on cumulative historical emissions of greenhouse gases, and also the wide variation per capita emissions across different parts of the world. And it sends out very powerful messages that those who are most vulnerable to the effects of climate change are those who contribute least to the problem. And that is why within the Paris Agreement, recalling the three goals of the Paris Agreement, which are the long-term temperature goal, which takes us to emissions reduction, but also the goals on adaptation and finance are absolutely critical for building consensus. They're interlocking goals, and we cannot achieve where we want to go without taking account of the whole package. So the symbolic value of commitments like the $100 billion from developed countries is incredibly important. Now, loss and damage will become up as an issue at COP28 again in a big way. The question of what happens when we go beyond the limits of adaptation and face residual risks. Now, there's another dimension to equity, which is the national and subnational perspectives. There are obviously big economic opportunities associated with a low carbon agenda, but also risks for those in declining sectors and the communities that host these economic activities. There are also impacts on consumers. A feature of the low carbon transition is that it's capital intensive. You may lower costs in the long term, but you need to put money up front to make it happen. And the ability to pay for these upfront costs and who's going to pay for it will be absolutely critical. So both at the more national and subnational level, the kind of the just transition aspects, what in terms of both supply, employers, employees, and also consumers is important. So just transition is a prerequisite for consent and to make it effective. I might remind Lord Deben that I came to speak to the Climate Change Committee about just transition. And I think you shamelessly said, Lord Deben, I'll steal all the ideas from Scotland, but I won't use the phrase. I think was what you there. So you were very welcome to the ideas there. Now, I'm just going to finish off, but maybe I'm not supposed to talk about individual countries, but let me just give you a couple of messages, and it's up to you to infer whether this has significance in the UK. I'm not actually going to say it. So the first thing is about net zero. It's not about when you get to net zero. It's the cumulative emissions that you have on the pathway to net zero. So the pathway matters, and delayed action means the world will be warmer than it otherwise would have been. And I think that's a very important message to remember. Second message on fossil fuels, a very clear message in the last report that the reserves of fossil fuels in the ground would exceed the carbon budgets for the long-term temperature goal in the Paris Agreement if they were all burned. And the numbers that were mentioned were 80% of coal, 50% of oil, and 30% of gas of current reserves would need to stay in the ground to limit warming to 2 degrees. Very stark numbers. So any addition to reserves that we make at the moment just creates more acute problems for future policymakers who may have to choose between the economic revenues that they get from burning the fuels versus actually meeting the Paris targets. So I hope I haven't strayed into UK domestic policy there at all, but I'll just leave it with a couple of final messages. Urgency, we are in a difficult and dangerous place, but we are not helpless. We have the agency to actually pursue action. And finally, paying attention to equity is absolutely essential if we're going to build the consent around ambitious climate action. And I'll finish it there.